In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Oh, don't you know it? Alan Adams is here in studio with us. It's Monday afternoon. All that sort of thing. Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. We're just chatting in the break there about the focus group getting together with our old friend Sam Kirkendall and his group Yes and Co. down in Portland. Sounds like it was a great show Saturday.
Yeah, we had a really good set. It was a lot of fun. We did. We went down it's their monthly show is at the Portland Media Center, right there in the heart of Portland. And we followed the Yes and Co model, which is basically based on the improv game known as the Armando. For those who don't know, it's basically someone tells a story and that story serves as the inspiration for the improv that follows. And what we did was we figured it out, and we decided that two of us would tell stories for them, and then two of them would tell stories for us.
Nice.
And so it was a really nice sort of, commingling of everything. And I told the story of our supposedly sick kittens that we nursed back to health. And Mike gave us, frankly, a fantastic rendition of what he calls his Beards Night Out story from London.
Wow. Now I want to hear that
story.
Yeah,
it's a really good one. Whenever anyone throws air quotes around drugs and you're just like, what does that mean? And what it means is there were definitely drugs. What kind? We're still not sure. we got after it. We went down there, had some fun, did what we do. And then made our way back. It was a late night, but it was a heck of a good time.
That's awesome. And when is the next local show for the focus group?
We are scheduled for our next show is September 15th.
Oh.
September 15th, nice. And then October 20th. And then looming will be the latest iteration of the Improv Me Festival, dates TBD.
Yeah, sometime in early November.
Yes, that is the current plan anyway.
And I was trying to think about this. Is this... because we had COVID and that messed it up a little bit. Would this be the 10th?
Geez, you know, it might be. It's one of those things where it's like, I'm going to have to do a little bit of math.
Yeah.
But it might be, it might be 9th, but it's like we're in that sort of rate. Because I want to say the first one was 2012.
Something like that, yeah.
So yeah. Missing out a couple, but anyway. But it's, the fact that it's still going at all is pretty remarkable when you stop and think about it. But improv for days.
Love it. Love it indeed. Any movies of note?
Well, I didn't get to the movie theater.
No. And I don't know if you heard me too. We were talking about high school movies. Did I remember that you liked 21 Jump Street?
I liked 21 Jump Street very much.
Yeah.
Phil Miller and Christopher Lord, the guys who cut their teeth on Community and then sort of became big deal filmmakers, both inside the Marvel Cinematic Universe and without. Channing Tatum, Jonah Hill, really just an excellent. And I love a movie that is both a send up of and an homage to, a pre-existing sort of thing.
Mm.
So it's very much in keeping with the tradition of the old. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. 21 Jump Street was one of the first like Fox originals, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that's where I believe that is where Johnny Depp first came into our lives full. In full. Like I know he had done a couple of like horror movies and stuff like that before, but yeah. And Holly Robinson was in that. Peter DeLuise, who I always in my head is Dom DeLuise's son. I don't know if that's true or not, but I've just decided that that's true.
I always thought that too. Is there a chance he isn't?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I've never actually looked. Richard Grieco, like, look, I may have watched 21 Jump Street a little bit in my younger days, but yes, the film was great. Of the ones that you were talking about, I love the sports ones, obviously.
Mm.
I Ride Hard for Heathers. Like, I love that movie. And in connection, another high school movie that I don't believe appeared on your list, Pump Up the Volume, is another one that's really excellent. That's a high school movie.
And another one I thought of more dramatic, but I love it. Stand and Deliver.
Stand and Deliver. That's a great one. Although again, that's one that's maybe more oriented towards the teaching side of things than the student. So that might be why it didn't. But then I was like, I was listening on the way over here, and I'm like, I just remember there being so many kind of terrible, like, set in high school movies, you know, during the time when I was really, like, going to the video store. So I'm thinking of, like, do you remember the movie Hiding Out?
I do not.
John Cryer plays a stockbroker who's on the run from the mob, and so he goes back to his hometown and like dyes his hair and re-enrolls in high school to hide from the hitmen. His assumed name is Maxwell Hauser because someone asked him his name and he was looking at a coffee can. That kind of movie. That was the one that immediately sprung to mind. That one. And do you remember 3 o'clock High?
I do remember 3 o'clock.
Like, that was a pretty good one.
I actually like that. Yeah.
But I think it's a movie that's sort of been lost to time in the way that a lot of this stuff is. Now that instead of just, you know, heavy HBO rotation, we have all these streaming services.
By the way, Peter DeLuise is indeed the son of Dom DeLuise.
Excellent. This is what I'm talking about. This is great radio, folks. Like, you're not going to get this anywhere else. I'll tell you about that.
Nope.
You know, 100% more Dom DeLuise's kid, 100% less Nazis.
Yes.
That's what you get here in downtown with Rich Kimball.
Special. Yes.
But yeah, look, I'm a big fan of high school movies generally, and that, like, the list you guys were discussing, it sounds pretty good. Like, that's a pretty good collection of films there. So kudos to the folks at the AV Club.
Indeed. So what did you see?
Well, I actually saw I saw a film on Netflix, and I saw two, not one, but two on Amazon Prime.
Oh my!
We saw on Netflix the new Gal Gadot. Godot. I'm so confused as to how I'm supposed to pronounce her name at this point. But anyway, a new action film starring her called Heart of Stone. A film clearly intended to kick off a franchise. We'll see how that goes. And then on the Amazon Prime side, I saw two very different movies. I watched a movie called Red, White, and Royal Blue. Based on the best-selling novel of the same name, that was very sweet. Not a wheel reinvention of any sort of thing, but still pretty fun. And I actually also saw a movie called Destination NBA, a G League Odyssey, which is a documentary that followed a number of G League players and their quest to make their way to or back to the NBA. That was that was pretty solid as well. So I got three. What do we want to talk about?
Well, let's start with the possible franchise opener here.
Okay. So So Heart of Stone is the name of this film. As I said, Gal Gadot stars. Her name is Rachel Stone, because of course it is.
Okay.
So I'm trying to figure out how to talk about this without spoiling too much, but the truth is, it's like we get our reveal, like, basically in the first 10 minutes of the movie, so I'm not going to worry about it. But yes, we meet Agent Rachel Stone as she's serving as backup for some sort of MI6 mission to track down an arms dealer. She's the hacker in the van, and that's where we meet her, while the field agents are out there doing their thing, trying to capture this arms dealer. But then things go sideways, Rich. And when things go sideways, despite being told to stay in the van, Rachel Stone does not stay in the van. And she goes out, and that's when we learn she's not just a hacker. She's actually a secret agent.
Wow.
Working for an organization known only as like a shadowy, like, you know, it's the Mission Impossible Force, or whatever you want to call it. Like, it's the same sort of, like, we have our intelligence agencies, and then we have our secret intelligence agencies. This one is a group called the Charter. Which their whole thing is branding with, like, playing cards and card suits. That's where the Heart of Stone comes from in our title.
Yeah.
But they use a Well, it's AI because that's what everything is now, called The Heart. So Heart of Stone. It's that kind of movie, wow. Rich.
Yeah.
That is basically so, it's a quantum computer that's so powerful that it can do so many calculations that it can basically predict the future. Because that's how computers work. Everybody knows that.
Right, right.
But as you might imagine, there are shadowy forces at work who would much rather have the heart in their own hands as opposed to being wielded by a mysterious organization such as the Charter. Well, there's betrayal and all kinds of secret agent nonsense. Does Rachel Stone get disavowed? Rich, you better believe she does. Because, again, that's what happens in these movies. She is like, something bad's going to happen. And everyone in charge is like, no, it's not. Get out of here. And then something bad happens. And wouldn't you know it, she's the only one who has the capability of potentially saving the day. And away we go. That's kind of it. It was a perfectly pleasant sort of watch. They were clearly laying the groundwork for trying to establish some sort of franchise with this, particularly when you take into account the films, the basically the last quarter of the film. But it's fine. Like our gal is pretty solid as far as like the action movie stuff. Like she's built for it. Like she's got not necessarily the greatest actress as far as that goes, mm-hmm. but when it comes to pretending to throw punches and do stunty type stuff, like she handles that pretty well. And everyone involved seemed to be having an okay time. A lot of shots were very clearly the Netflix dome. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh,
when it's
yeah.
like it's
yep.
they're in there and it's like, oh yeah, this is all being projected on the inside of some sort of giant warehouse somewhere in Atlanta. And that's we've sort of grown accustomed to that. I think Netflix maybe learned their lesson with some of their more ambitious offerings of the past couple of years where they, jet set to various locations mm-hmm. and stuff and realized, 95% of our audience does not care about any of that. So let's just throw some CGI crap on a wall and call it a day. And as far as that goes, Heart of Stone, it's not a great movie, but, it'll pass the time.
All right. That's not bad. How about Red, White, and Royal Blue?
Okay, so I was curious about this one because Sheridan had actually read the book. The book came out, I think, like 5 years ago. I had actually gotten it for her as a gift on the recommendation of the folks down at the Briar Patch.
Ah, nice.
It's a romantic comedy that is basically... So the basic plot is we have the Prince of England, the spare prince, so not like the heir.
Oh,
like,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah, the extra one. he's doing his thing in England, and then we have the son of the American president and he's doing his thing trying to become more involved in his mother's administration.
Oh.
His mother, the president, played by Uma Thurman, actually.
I'd get behind that.
Right. Yeah. President Uma. Yeah. I'll do that. You know what else you'll get behind? So the king of England, our prince's grandfather, Stephen Fry.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right.
We don't get nearly enough of either of them.
No.
But yeah. So we've got Alex Claremont Diaz. That's the president's son, attends a royal wedding, and then we have Prince Henry, the grandson of the king, also at the wedding, there's an incident. The two have been sort of butting heads at various functions over the years, and it kind of boils over to the point where a bit of an international incident. Scandal's a little too strong, but embarrassment for both sides. And so it is demanded of both of them that they make up, they do some photo ops and sort of establish that actually they're friends, they're not really mad at each other, blah, 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 in an effort to save some sort of trade deal. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter why they do it. It's mentioned once and then promptly forgotten about. So if the movie can forget about it, we can too. So the two connect, and you know, it's, you know, they're very openly sort of antagonistic toward one another in that rom-com way that pretty much broadcasts what how this is going to go. And then it goes the way you think it's going to go. And then we get to follow as, you know, as their sort of connection grows and develops and what that means for both of them in terms of the sort of, I don't know, the their respective administrations of their families. And that's sort of the deal. I don't want to go into too much detail because, again, you don't want to spoil too much. But Sheridan and I enjoyed this movie very much. Like, again, I'm a sucker for a romantic comedy, and it's nice that they continue to be made. I'm glad someone that was not Netflix made one. Again, it's it's still the same, very very much the same sort of vibe. Like they're all you know, pulling from the same playbook at this point, but. You know, it's charming in its way. It's got some pretty good actors sort of around the periphery. I'd never heard of either of our leads. They're the sorts of blandly handsome people you would expect to see on, I don't know, like the CW or something. I actually at one point turned to Sheridan and I was like, so did they just go to ChatGPT and just say, you know, generically handsome? And this is what we got, because that's kind of the deal. Like they're both, I mean, good looking dudes, but it's like, like I feel like you've been assembled by an algorithm, which, considering the source, maybe.
Right.
But again, it's sweet, it's charming. It's not gonna blow your hair back. It's not gonna change your life. But it was a pretty good time. And like I said, we were charmed by it. I got a little sniffly in a couple of places because, again, I am easily emotionally manipulated. but the difference was I might not have been like deeply impacted by it, but I also didn't feel resentful at my emotions being manipulated. And frankly, for some of these streaming like romances, like that's the best you can hope for. Yeah, so yeah, Red, White, and Royal Blue. Maybe not the king, maybe not the president, but you know, prince. You know, VP, sure.
All right. And third in your triumvirate of film awesomeness.
Yeah. So I was back and forth. This one actually came out a little earlier than the others because those two both dropped this past Friday. And you know, this one, Destination NBA, it dropped, I believe, on August 8th. So this past Tuesday. And I had seen it kind of come up, and I was like, oh, is that a, like, whenever I see something like that, I'm always like, oh, I assume it's a docuseries. So it's like a television show or whatever. And then it turns out it is just a standalone film. And I'm like, you know what? Let's check this out. Like, you know, Sheridan's not a huge sports doc fan. So I kind of did this one on my own. But yeah, it was really pretty interesting because they basically took four guys who played in the G League. Last year. And for those who are unfamiliar, the G League, formerly the D League, is basically the developmental league for the NBA. Kind of a minor league. It's basically where they put players who, for whatever reason, aren't quite ready to be on an NBA roster, but they want to keep them in the fold. And so it's a chance for these players to stay playing close to home and to be available in case they are needed by an NBA team. So, you know, like, you know, draft picks or undrafted free agents, that sort of thing. Those are the kinds of guys who tend to populate most of these teams, with the exception of the Team G League Ignite, which is sort of pitched as a an alternative to college for burgeoning basketball players, a chance for them to play professionally, to make some money playing before they reach their draft eligibility. And one of the players was a G League Ignite guy, Scoot Henderson, who actually just went third in this past NBA draft to the Portland Trail Blazers. So he's one of the featured players in this documentary. And then there's a guy, I believe his name was Gabe York, who is an older guy, like almost 30, who's been playing professionally for like something like 8 years. Bounced around Europe for a while and then came back here in an effort to try to make his way to an NBA roster. He plays for the Fort Wayne Mad Ants.
I love it.
And then we've got the guy Mason Jones, who plays for the team in Mexico City. He's a pretty fascinating character. Denzel Valentine, who, at least during this, the filming of this, was a member of the Maine Celtics, formerly the Red Claws. Former Bulls player who's trying to work his way back to the league. And then I want to make sure I get his name right, because I feel like I had kind of heard of this guy. This guy, his name is Ryan Terrell. He's 23. He played his college ball. He's a former D3 player who played at Yeshiva University. And he
is a basketball powerhouse.
He is trying to be the first Orthodox Jew to play in the NBA.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And he keeps kosher, like he observes the Sabbath, like he wears a yarmulke on the court. Like, I mean, it's just this whole thing, which you get to see in pieces, and you get to see, like, he's from New York City, and so he is to a segment of the population, he's kind of a big hero, because and it's one of those things where it's like, you know, one of those tidbits that I kind of knew but hadn't really thought about. It's like the connection between the Jewish faith and basketball is longstanding. Like the NBA, when it first started, was largely a Jewish league. Mm. And so, and those connections have been maintained, particularly in urban areas like New York City and stuff like that. But yeah, and so it's just, we move back and forth, like watching these guys as they journey through, a particular season. We get to see them as they, you know, they rehab from injuries, they try to figure out how they're going to make their way up the ladder. And interspersed throughout, there are interviews with current NBA guys who spent time in the G League, and sort of they can talk to that experience as well. Again, it's not like it's not the sort of film that I'm going to feel the need to revisit or anything like that. But as far as like a sort of slice of life, looking at a professional sports league that I'm relatively ill-informed about. Like, I follow the NBA a little, but as far as the G League, like beyond stuff like I know Portland has a team, and I know what the Ignite is, but other than that, like it doesn't really take up a whole lot of space in my sports knowing. And so watching this movie and kind of getting a better grasp of just who some of these guys are and what they're trying to do. I think it was Denzel Valentine who brought this point up, and it was really I thought really thoughtful. He's like, here's the thing, these guys are all among the 1,000 or so best basketball players in the world, and the reality is, like, there are, you know, guys at the top like your LeBrons, your Giannis's, your Kevin Durant's, whatever. He's like, but you know, the gap between 300 and 700 is much narrower than you think.
Right.
And it's just a question of luck, opportunity, combination therein. So all these guys, like they have legitimate reason to keep that dream alive. And so watching them pursue it and, in some cases achieve it, at least to some small degree, it's pretty fascinating. So if you're a fan of sports docs, it's available on Amazon Prime. And I think it's worth a watch.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Check that out. Thanks, Alan.
Hey, my pleasure.
Have a good rest of your week.
You as well.
See you next Monday.
Okay.